from WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's Friday, January 20th. On this episode of Redux, we examine the line between prostitution and human trafficking by attempting to answer this one question. Do prostitution arrests help women get out of the sex trade? We also have an update on the rebuilding effort of County Dock and other structures destroyed by Hurricane Matthew. And finally, the greatest show on earth is coming to an end, and we have the first female ringmaster in studio. But first, some news. A day for honoring a civil rights hero devolved into chaos after a fatal shooting at the Jacksonville Landing on Martin Luther King Day. This was the second shooting near the downtown landmark this month. WJCT's Ryan Bank headed to the area earlier this week to find out whether business owners and shoppers alike still feel safe at the landing.
In the back right corner of Chicago Pizza is one of the landing's newest businesses, the Good Look Have Fun Game Bar. The walls are covered with video game and comic book character murals and stocked with large screen TVs, computers, and gaming consoles. It's one of three businesses that have opened since late last year. Closer to the landing's front doors, Jarvis James and his family are enjoying some snacks and laughs at Coastal Cookies. He says he's heard about the recent shootings involving teenagers, but
there's no way we'll let that run us away from the Jacksonville Landing. This is our city, and we've got to take it back. And our being here is doing that.
So it doesn't scare you at all? I mean,
but naturally, danger scares people. But the love of our city is greater than the fear of our city.
This week, Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams said it's likely the two recent shootings were connected gang-related incidents.
And I think it's a problem everywhere. And yeah, we've had our share of those, absolutely. And at the same time, we've had in many cases, a new level of cooperation that we're very proud of. But in some of these circles, we're not going to get that cooperation.
That's sound from our partner, News for Jax. News for Jax also reports Jacksonville Landing owner Tony Slayman is considering banning groups of teens under the age of 21. The mall already escorts groups of teens under 18 off the property. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
As we begin our reporting on sex trafficking, Northeast Florida State Attorney Melissa Nelson announced earlier this week her office is creating a new division to go after human traffickers on the First Coast. Nelson is a member of the Northeast Florida Human Trafficking Coalition, which works with judges, lawyers, police officers, and community groups to increase awareness of the problem.
Because these crimes intersect with almost all different areas of the criminal justice system, including drug trafficking, sexual assault, and others. Adding these dedicated resources is a way that we can help those preyed upon to end this vicious cycle.
Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams says last year the coalition helped 44 victims and put more than two dozen human traffickers behind bars, including this one.
2016, we arrested Antoine Harper. He approached a juvenile victim, 15 years old, who was also a missing person, in a local mall in late 2015. He used another juvenile victim to indoctrinate her. He photographed her, posted online advertisements promoting his commercial sex operation, and ultimately he was arrested and has pled guilty to child sex trafficking.
Williams credits training and education programs for last year's successes. He continues to urge the public to remain vigilant and to call police if they suspect someone may be a victim of human trafficking.
Thank you.
Over the past 5 years, Jacksonville police have made about 1,000 arrests for buying, selling, or soliciting sex, with 8 out of every 10 of those arrests involving female offenders, many for the second or third time. While the sheriff's office says arresting prostitutes helps them, some officials in other cities are focusing more on rehabilitation and less on jail time. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride has the story.
Jamie Roslin's second prostitution charge was in 2013, at the age of 25. She remembers the day her mugshot and charge were published in a Jacksonville newsletter called The Victim's Advocate, as part of a column called Shame, Shame, Shame.
It's really hard to know that's how people know you, is that you've been in a publication like that. Those stories just fuel a stigma that women who are arrested for prostitution are unworthy, they're criminals. How could I even ever know that I was a victim of human trafficking when society has labeled me disgusting, whore, worthless?
She can trace how she got there several years earlier.
I think in my story, I started off with not having any self-worth. I think that was like the root of it, was I never felt good enough without a man's approval.
Roslyn was in an abusive relationship. When she finally got out of it, she met another man who she says saw her vulnerability as a business opportunity.
For me, I was lured in that he would take care of my needs, that he would meet my needs, that he would serve and offer some sort of protection, and that I had some sort of control in it. And it was this terrible illusion that I had some sort of control. He had my ID. He had my keys.
She wanted to leave her trafficker, but with an arrest record, getting away wasn't easy.
I felt that there was no life to go back to, that how could I ever get a job? How could anybody ever look at me as a viable, creative, hardworking human being again?
Seeing how difficult it can be to break the cycle of prostitution and arrests, Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes drastically changed his city's approach to it in 2012.
Like basically every other jurisdiction, we were very focused heavily on the sales side of the transaction.
He says twice as many women were getting arrested for prostitution as men who were attempting to buy sex. Seattle has since flipped those numbers by focusing law enforcement stings on the buyers. Holmes says there was one night when
we arrested 204 men seeking sex at a massage parlor.
If a woman is caught selling sex in Seattle, she isn't automatically arrested. Police can direct her to services instead of jail. If she is arrested, judges can sentence her to services. Jail is reserved for people who refuse assistance.
The message is, we want to help. At the same time, this conduct is not optional.
In Jacksonville, police don't offer women services instead of arresting them. Once they're in custody, they do get a medical screening and mental health evaluation, and they can get referred to an in-jail substance abuse and mental health treatment program called the Matrix House, but only if they're in long enough.
They may bond out, they may be in, they may make a plea, and they're back out the next day. So the Matrix House only comes into play when we've got them for a little bit. Maybe a judge has sentenced them, and we've got them for a little while.
Jacksonville Sheriff's Office Investigations Director Ron Lindvay says JSO has an obligation to help women who are victims, but it's also obligated to enforce the law.
Our citizens who want a good quality of life in their neighborhood are equally of value as far as deserving our services to make sure their neighborhoods aren't fraught with drugs and prostitution.
Lindvay says prostitution stings are complaint-driven. People call police to report the activity. If officers come across signs of trafficking, meaning women are being forced into sex work, Integrity Special Investigations takes over. Lieutenant Kevin Goff oversees that unit.
And then we start going through the service providers, and they can provide housing, clothing, job placement, counseling, medical services.
Goff says it's common for women charged with prostitution to refuse services. There are more than 350 repeat prostitution arrests over the last 5 years.
Is arresting them helping them?
Go ahead.
I think arresting is helping them, because if you do not arrest them, they will continue in that lifestyle and they'll continue on because there's no, I don't want to say penalty, but there's no repercussion for it.
Jamie Roslin was lucky enough to break free. Today, she's a marketing assistant at ReThreaded.
So is this your workstation area?
This is my desk. It's great. I have a picture of my son over here. He gets really excited anytime he's here. He's like, you have a picture of me. I'm like, we've established this.
The nonprofit employs survivors like her.
Arresting women for prostitution just makes absolutely no sense. It doesn't solve any problem. It's not a deterrent.
She argues most women arrested for prostitution aren't going to self-identify as being trafficked. She didn't until she was out of the situation.
Most women will say that that's their boyfriend, that's their old man, and they're not going to identify as being a survivor of human trafficking, and that we need to dig deeper.
Goff and Lindvay with JSO say the department's mentality has changed over the past decade to realize traffickers cause a lot of the problem, but they say police can't reach them without catching the women. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Now I'm joined by Lindsay Kilbride in studio. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, Vince.
Since your report first aired a couple weeks back, what has the reaction been?
You know, some people brought up that it should just be decriminalized. In the story, you hear Jamie talk about the day that her mugshot was posted in a publication. And people said to me, wow, you know, I always think that too. Or maybe I never thought about that. I heard both that, you know, some people feel like it's very unfair that these women's photos are posted, but often the John's photos aren't posted. And sometimes that's because they're not arrested. And so it kind of brought a little bit of an awareness. I had a lot of conversations about what our city is doing and what they personally think our city should do.
So there's incarceration, there's rehabilitation, and now there's decriminalization. Describe a little bit the movement to decriminalize prostitution.
The human rights organization Amnesty International has recommended decriminalizing prostitution. And I talked to Pete Holmes about this from Seattle, since, you know, his city is taking a more progressive approach. I was a little surprised because adamantly he's very against decriminalizing it. His argument is that it would be very difficult to prosecute a rape case if the transaction started off consensual. And so that's his take on it. Of course, we talked to Jacksonville sheriff's officers, and they really thought that having the threat of arrest was necessary. And that actually is similar to what the Seattle attorney thought. So, you know, it's nothing's black and white. People have different takes on the right way. But that's kind of a different thing we didn't approach in the story. That's also an option.
That was WJCT reporter Lindsay Kilbride. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you.
After you're done listening to this podcast, be sure to read Lindsay's story at wjctnews.org. Coming up. That was Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus's first female ringmaster, and we'll bring it all to you here. But first, an update. It's been a few months since we brought you the story of County Dock in Mandarin, which was destroyed after Hurricane Matthew. Now we have an update. WJCT's Michelle Corm was out there to get a first-person look, and here's her report.
Months after Hurricane Matthew skirted the first coast as a Category 3 storm, there are spots around Jacksonville, from Riverside to Oceanside, where it doesn't look like repairs have been made. In the Walter Jones Historical Park in Mandarin, a gate blocks off the dock leading out to the St. John's River, and it bears a warning, "Keep off, dock under repair," but nothing looks like it's been cleaned up. This was home to the county dock that sustained damage from the hurricane last October. Debris from fallen trees and washed-up trash and broken boards still litter the ground. Nearby resident Bridget Jones wants to see city officials make an effort to start a cleanup. She's always loved the park. Says a lot of photographers use the dock for wedding and prom photo shoots, but now...
Much of the dock is missing. I mean, it's clearly gone. There's no planks to walk, and it's been gated off. So the missing parts are, unfortunately, what we're seeing down here.
Councilman Matt Schellenberg says after the hurricane, the first order of business was to ensure roads in Mandarin were clear. Now, the Public Works Authority can focus on cleaning up the parks, and he hopes it will be done in the first quarter of this year, but FEMA reconstruction money is slow in coming.
I don't believe that we're going to be getting unfortunately, any money for the county doc anytime in the next 6 months to a year.
Meanwhile, the county doc wasn't the only walkway to fall victim to the storm. The Jacksonville Pier has been closed to the public after about 350 feet of the structure was ripped away. Councilman Keith Doherty says he wants to see it rebuilt as quickly as possible. The summer season is coming, and that brings more people, making construction difficult. Before any restorations begin, though, a dive team has to determine which posts, if any, to reset or if the whole pier needs to be rebuilt.
When I look at things like the pier, I get a little bit frustrated at the lack of progress and the speed at which city construction is done.
And while a 2-year timeline is realistic for pier reconstruction, Doherty wants to see it done in 6 months. Michelle Corum, WJCT News.
And finally, after nearly 150 years, The Greatest Show on Earth is folding up its tents. While the circus says the announcement is not a win for animal rights advocates, groups like PETA beg to differ. Now the circus is seeking homes for all of their animals, and hundreds of circus employees will soon be out of work. But you still have one last chance to see them perform because they're here in Jacksonville through Sunday. And this time around, it features a first-ever female ringmaster, Kristen Michelle Wilson, who stopped by WJCT Studios earlier this week on First Coast Connect. She spoke with host Melissa Ross about being the first-ever female ringmaster.
A lot of the circus performers are multi-generational. They grew up in it. I grew up as a performer. I had been previously a show host and a singer. I'd been touring with my band all around Florida for the last 6.5 years. And when I heard that Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus was doing a worldwide search for a brand new ringmaster, I said, I have to throw my hat in the ring. So
literally,
you could apply online from anywhere in the world.
How many people did you beat out?
Oh, there were at least 100. They had 5 major audition cities. Orlando was the very last one. And I've lived in Orlando the last 6.5 years, working at a dinner show, working with my band. And truly, it couldn't be a better preparation for living on a circus train and traveling the country presenting the greatest show on earth.
Wilson, who has only been with the circus since this past September, described what the mood was like when they found out over this past weekend that the circus would be ending its 150-year-long run.
Well, you know, I think all of us were just completely caught off guard. We were surprised. We were shocked. We were saddened. You know, we were given the news on Saturday, this past Saturday, so it's just been a very short amount of time to process it. But we are performers first, and, you know, as soon as the news hit, I think all of us were instantly steeling ourselves for the 3 remaining shows that we had in Orlando following the announcement.
With protests planned through the final day of the show's run here in Jacksonville Sunday, Wilson also addressed what's next for the animals.
I'm not sure, actually. You know, that's definitely something that in the coming weeks and months will be discussed and released to the public, I'm sure, because that's definitely a concern of everyone involved, especially the family who loves and cares for them as they always have. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I really encourage everyone to come see the show yourself. Really, it is a spectacular production.
You can listen to the entire interview on our First Coast Connect page at wjctnews.org. We'll also have a video of Michelle in our new segment called 5 Questions that I'll post to our Facebook page. You can also hear First Coast Connect each weekday morning at 9 a.m. on 89.9 FM or streaming on our WJCT app. And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe.